Hey folks, you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM. This is your Arts Talk radio show, and you're here with host Derek Breckner. And today we have one set of guests. We have two people coming to us from Edmonton, Alberta. This is one out of two Fringe show interviews that we're going to do. We're going to do another Fringe show interview next week. But today we have two people involved with the production For Science that's going to be at the Winnipeg Fringe Festival starting on July 20th and running to July 29th. We'll give you more specifics in terms of times and dates later on towards the end of the interview. But for now, I'd like to just welcome from the Fringe play For Science, Christine Lisiak and Ian Walker. Hello, Christine and Ian. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hello. Hello, Derek. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Coming to us from Mountain Time. Here we are.
The jet lag. Oh, virtual jet lag.
That's right. We're in the time machine, technically recording this on July 11th, but by the time we hear this and it's being aired, it will be July 13th, Thursday.
Could be a whole different world by then.
That's right. Right. So Christine and Ian, maybe give us a rundown of the play. I saw some of the clips that you sent me and looked at the press kit that you sent and has my interest. And there's a lot of things that I like about it. But I'm wondering maybe if you could just maybe give us a summary and then maybe we can talk about some of your process in terms of making theater. And I know, Christine, you teach as well. And so I'd like to maybe get into that a bit. And Ian has a bit of an engineering and sculpture and set design background. I'd like to talk to him about that as well.
So. Yeah.
Well, we can tell you that For Science, we call it a study in comedy. It's inspired by the fact that we both come from science backgrounds. So I have a degree in physics and Ian comes from a mechanical engineering background. And we say it's like Bill Nye the Science Guy meets Blue Man Group. So what we do is we set up a series of increasingly challenging experiments on stage, and I'm using air quotes around the word experiments, and invite audience members up to complete them, and just hilarity ensues. It ends in a spectacular musical finale, and it is just filled with joy and wonder, and it is endlessly entertaining for us and the audience as well.
Yeah, I'm noticing that the two of you, on top of like not really having any verbal dialogue for the play, but you also have a lot of interaction with the audience.
Yes, I would say we're more conductors of the audience.
We get a lot of people say, oh, is it audience interaction? And we're like, yes, it is. And they go, oh, I don't really like audience interaction. And we stress that we never select audience members. Audience members self-select. So you're never forced, you're never picked on. And we have people who would say, oh, I'd never get up on stage. And then they come to the show and sure enough, who gets up on stage? But these people that said they never would. So it's lovely to see that journey that they go on.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious about this. Is it where you just kind of leave an opening and somebody just randomly decides a brave person? Or do you have people like pre-planned that are going to come up? Or
we never pre-plan. No, I feel personally that's a violation of the live audience contract to like pre-plan stuff and try and put one over the audience. So I never do that. It is our job, non-verbally, to tell you what we need you to do. And so far, it's always worked.
The experiments we set up scratch an itch in your brain that means that everybody gets compelled at some point. They might not get up, but they're compelled to do. The thing that we set up on stage will scratch an itch and it will prompt you to want to get up and fix a thing or do a thing.
Now, as a person who's done a little bit of theater, I seem to recall that each night the audience has their own characteristics.
Yes.
So how do you kind of factor in all of that into the process of making the play and how are you thinking about that?
Well, this is a clown show, like to be completely transparent, that's what that is, which surprises some people because they don't look at it and go, oh no, that's a clown show, but it's what it is. And in that kind of training, I believe I've been taught that the largest area of improvisation is your relationship with the audience. So we have to change what we do or how we do it or how we make that clear depending on the audience that night. So far, it's always worked. She knocks on wood.
Could been a couple of moments where right at the top of the show, when we're basically introducing the audience to the world that we are putting on stage for them. And so there is definitely a pause, that initial, wait, what's happening here? Oh, I think we're supposed to be involved with this. So that early phase of the show, the very top of the show, having the penny drop in the audience as they clue into what we're doing, that can be a little nervy sometimes because you think, is anybody going to get up and do this? Are we going to, do we have an audience who are just flatly, no, I want to sit and watch a thing? In which case, the show doesn't work. We do rely on people to participate.
But we also take responsibility. We know it's our job to make you want to participate. That is our job to do that. And for me, that's where the most fun is. For me, the not knowing is just the bliss and the joy of it, because I get bored pretty quickly if I run a show a lot. And this one, there's never a dull moment.
Yeah, I mean, you've used a key word there of improvisation. And so I think that keeps it really lively. And there's always this edge of unpredictability, which can be a lot of fun. And I suspect keeps every performance really fresh, I think, too.
Oh, absolutely. Every time we do the show, someone does something we've never seen before. Right, Ian?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You think you've seen everything, and then somebody gets up and does a thing that is so left field that we'd never have imagined it. And it's fabulous to run with that. Like, we enjoy playing with that. It's fantastic.
Any examples that you could share with our listeners?
Without giving away what the experiments are, it's tricky. Okay. But
okay. Yeah, well, I don't take away your thunder for the show.
Well, Ian, you do have that one example from actually last time we were in Winnipeg, because we did this in 2019, so a lifetime ago. Oh, I was thinking the paper product, but whichever one you like, you tell.
There's an experiment involving Lego, and we're basically teasing people to come and spill the whole bucket full of Lego all around me while I'm in just my socks. So the dreaded stepping on Lego, it's playing into. And some people really want to push the bucket over. Others do not. They want to save it. They absolutely don't want to see that. And we had one guy get up and very casually just pick the bucket up and wander around the stage, scattering it like a farmer sows seed. And the professor who's in charge of the proceedings, she just let him go. She's like, this is unusual, but we'll let it go because it was funny. Like, everybody was just into it. This guy was so committed to covering every inch of the stage with Lego. So we ran with it.
And it sounds visually very, very active. I mean, it sounds like he activated the stage really well, too. So,
Yeah. Now, I do have a whistle. I play the professor, and the professor has a whistle. If things get out of control or rules are being violated, there are mechanisms in place to make sure everybody's feeling safe and in control. But generally, whatever people want to do, as long as it's safe and not too disruptive, we're very curious to see what happens.
And it's important as well that the audience is never made to feel like they're in the wrong. They're never wrong. They can't be wrong, unless it was unsafe, but it never is. So, we established very quickly that if you're getting up to do a thing, you can't be wrong and you won't be made to look a fool. Absolutely not. You know, you're in safe hands with us, even though we're idiots and we're clowns, you're in safe hands.
But conversely, what's really interesting, even though we'll accept any offer, you can't be wrong, audiences really do self-police. They want to see the thing done the way they think the thing is supposed to be done, because it's pretty obvious what the goal is for each one of the experiments. And we've had situations where people have gone up and done something that, it's a little bit out of the box or left field, and other audience members will jump up and fix it because they just are not willing to leave it that way. So we never really know what's going to happen.
That's nice. I mean, it sounds like the play is making room for the linear thinkers and the non-linear thinkers, it's like it's all kind of, there's a nice mix.
Yeah, it's ridiculous play. It is like, it is pure play in the sense of the activity, not just the form. Yeah.
And you know, like you've said that in some ways these characters are like clowns on stage. And I keep thinking about that, you know, I've heard of one, there's actually a clown training school in Quebec, and there's probably others in the country. And so I guess in some ways you're kind of tapping into the history of the clown in some ways. Would that be a fair thing to say?
Yeah, I would say that's definitely true. There's many different schools of clowning. Most of my training is in the Canadian, often called the pachinko method of clowning. But at the end of the day, it all goes to the same place where the spirit of the clown is one of living in the moment, of playing, of seeing the world in slightly different eyes. I like clowns who are minimally verbal. That's just sort of my personal taste. That's what I like to do. It's about being in the body. And mostly being incredibly present. And I think that's why this show has worked so well to date is we don't know what's going to happen. So we have to be purely in the moment and this place of readiness is in expectation, which puts the entire audience there as well, because they know that we don't know. So we all get to not know together, which is an incredible, beautiful place to be in a room with several hundred people.
We've had people who have come back to this show multiple times because they recognize it's different every time and they just want to see it again. They want to see other people up on stage. Or sometimes they're like, oh, I really wanted to get up and do that and I didn't. I'm going to go back tomorrow night. I'm going to get up and do that thing. So yeah, it's fascinating.
That's what I thought. I thought that, you know, as a, you know, there are probably some shy people that want to get up there, but they just didn't find that opening and they thought, okay, I'll come back the next night and see if I can get that moment where I can get up there. So, yeah. I think it's really interesting that the show doesn't have any verbal language being spoken. I think a couple of reasons. I think one is that you could do this play in anywhere in the world and not have to worry about language or subtitles or any of that stuff. And I think two, I think it's also about this idea of like, how do you communicate to people? Does it have to be verbally? You know? And so I think it's really great to and interesting to see that, I think.
The other magic of it in being able to be international as well is that we're just tapping into human nature. We're just tapping into human beings and things that we're compelled to do. So it does translate everywhere. We've got clown friends in Japan they would love to help bring for science to Japan. They think it would go over really well there. So.
Yeah, like I remember back, I was in Italy in the mid 90s and I was in some piazza, I can't remember, but it had two clowns or sort of clown type performance. And they were making, you know, auditory noises and expressive sound, but they weren't speaking a language. And there was a crowd around them. And, you know, I'm sure from multiple countries, because it was, you know, in the middle of Rome and the tourist area, and they just had everybody laughing like crazy. And I just thought, wow, isn't that amazing? All the communication with all those different cultures and languages, and it's all kind of happening. And I'm getting the feeling that's exactly what happens with you folks as well. I'm curious, have you done performances in any areas where you weren't speaking English? Like maybe you've done this in Quebec, and I don't know.
We did a short piece of it in Montreal, but I would say the audience was mixed English and French speakers. There are slides with text on them, but you don't really need to understand the text to enjoy the show.
Well, and quite honestly, people who speak English will read the titles and not fully understand them either. They're clown names for experiments, so but they're very based in science. They look very authentically scientific.
Great. So if you're just tuning in, I'm in the middle of an interview here with two performers with the upcoming Fringe play for science. We have performers Christine Lisiak and Ian Walker here. And we're just in the middle of talking about their play for science. That's going to be opening July 20th and running till July 29th for the Winnipeg Fringe Festival. So I'm wondering also, Ian, as a person who's an art maker and sometimes making objects for performances, I'm kind of curious about your engineering background and all the sort of contraptions that you're making for the performance. Can you talk about that a bit in terms of the process with that and how you and Christine kind of collaboratively kind of come about making these things, or like how does it happen?
I was mechanical engineering designing automation for 25, 28 years before I got into theater and performing. I moved to Edmonton 8 years ago, and the theater community quickly got hold of, oh, Ian might be quite useful building things. So I got requests to build props, mostly for Christine, actually. She became my boss of, can you build this crazy thing, like a casket, like a burial casket that folds down and becomes a coffee table with a fully set tea service already laid in there. Bizarre tricks like that. And for science, there's not a ton of builds, but there's, well, I don't want to give it away, really.
Yeah, you don't have to, but I'll just say this, Ian. I admire people that have that kind of skill. I mean, I'm a drawing and painting person. I've always admired sculptors that can do things like that. And I think that these objects that are transformative, I think, are very interesting as art objects, and of course can give the audience nice surprises too. And
Yeah, there's a magic moment, especially with an object that transforms in theatre. There's just a magic moment, right? Or an object that used in multiple ways with a very quick and easy adaptation, it becomes an entirely different object. And so, to minimize the amount of props that you have or amount of set you have, but then having that one piece that maybe can be used for four or three different things is really interesting.
yeah, and I think, also cuts down the shipping cost too of having to ship everything and transport it too. So it's all, there's a lot of wins there, I think, which has me very attracted to that sort of art making, I think.
Well, and for science, there are props, and we put a screen up because we do projection. We're right at the very limit of what's possible in a fringe setup, because with fringe, you only get, you get a very short amount of time to set up before your show. And then after your show, you have to strike everything. You can't leave anything on stage. You're striking for the next act. The two of us can't do it together. We need the stage manager to help. And even with three of us, we're hustling to get the show set up and to strike it at the end.
Are you guys looking for volunteers?
We're always looking for volunteers. We have a stage manager who's going to be working with us. And then quite often at the end of the show, audience members will stick around and help clean up because it does get chaotic.
No, I remember. Yeah. Well, I'm very excited for you folks and glad to have you returning to Winnipeg. I think that's really great.
Yeah, we're excited to come. It was 2019 we came there, and we were a little way out of the main hub, but we still did well. We still had good houses, and so this time we're right in the hub of it, in the thick of it this year.
Christine, do you want to maybe for our listeners just mention the times and dates for the performances if you've got in front of you?
Yeah, I'd love to. We are going to be at the Tom Henry Warehouse, which is on Rupert Avenue. We open on Thursday, July 20th at 3 p.m., and then we have seven shows throughout the duration of the festival, which are all at different times. We've got some matinees, we got some late nights. If you go to the Winnipeg Fringe website, you will be able to buy tickets. You can also visit us at our website, which is smallmatters.ca, and all the information's there as well.
Great. And I'm noticing you guys have also got Instagram and Facebook. So if people look for Small Matters there, they can find it on social
They
media.
sure can. And thank you for saying that because I never remember that part.
So, Christine, I'm kind of curious about your teaching. What's your relationship to teaching and to theater? I mean, it's interesting you have this science degree for an undergrad, and then you did your master's in theater. So I'm kind of curious, what are you teaching and who are you teaching? And then how is that kind of relating to your theater practice that you're doing with Ian?
I love teaching. I've always loved teaching. Even when back in the physics days, I did a lot of lab teaching and stuff as well, and I always really enjoyed it. So it was a natural extension when I started doing theater to also have a teaching practice with that as well. I teach a lot of very basic introduction to clown and physical comedy, presence, a lot about being present, because no matter what kind of performance, speaking, anything you do, it's good to be present in life, how to listen. how to respond in the moment. We spend a lot of our time anticipating or thinking ahead of what we're going to say rather than being in the moment. So a lot of my practices around that. Introduction to Creative Process is what I've taught an awful lot at various institutions and the university, which is one of my favorite things to teach. It's so cross-disciplinary. I mean, you as an artist, you know yourself. So much of it is about just getting out of your own way and doing the thing. A lot of it is really rooted in the acceptance of failure and imperfection. And taking what might be perceived as a failure and an imperfection and spinning it into gold, which is foundational to clown training. I had a very, very different relationship to failure before I started doing my improvisation and clown training. And I'm a much happier and more relaxed person for it. So I love sharing that sort of life experience and that philosophy of being. I think a lot of art and science is really the same pool. We're coming from the same place, that place of the spirit of inquiry, of curiosity, of a willingness to take a risk and explore and see what happens, and then step back and critically look at it and sort of say, okay, what's working, what isn't working, what are we keeping, what are we discarding? So struggling with rejection of perfection, I would say, is foundational to my practice, no matter what I'm teaching. And I do a lot of directing and dramaturgy as well, because I love visual storytelling. It is my jam. And Ian, as well as a filmmaker, is also super interested in visual storytelling. We know that most communication is nonverbal. So what can we say with fewer words, which I've just used a lot of words to say?
Well, this is the irony of a visual artist having a radio show, you know, so it's like, but I agree with everything you just said, to like the point, like it is in me deep in terms of the philosophy, in terms of how I think about my making, and I teach as well. And you're absolutely right. These things do overlap tremendously in terms of the visual arts. It really is about like, how do you get out of your way? How do you utilize and capitalize on mistakes, and how do you sort of separate yourself from that initial idea that you had and let go of it and see what else can happen, right? And I remember as a first year student a long, long time ago, having a lot of trouble with that. And, you know, I had my first 2 years of art school having professors tell me to loosen up, you know? So it's like, I understand that really well. It's interesting how all these disciplines, you know, still have a lot of the same ideas. I think it's really interesting.
It's entirely cross-discipline. Yeah. I used to teach at a digital arts college, a lot of people who were illustrators, you know, digital art, visual art. And I did all the same stuff with them as I did Intro to Clown students. We're going to do all these stupid things that are very silly, and you're going to make mistakes, and there's no way you can complete the exercise without making mistakes. And then we're going to talk about that feeling and why it is not helping us. Same stuff, different pot.
So Ian, we're going to run out of time here, but I'm wondering maybe if you can kind of bring in your engineering and your filmmaking in relation to what Christine and I are talking about a bit. You know, give us a bit of wisdom there.
Yeah, it's interesting how much of my mechanical engineering is similar to building and creating theatre as well. Like we are, especially in our show, it's very evident. There's the mechanics of the show. There's the moving parts and there's pieces that come together. So we talk about mechanisms and mechanics of the show and having that show run as a machine. Even when the audience tried and throw a wrench in the works, there's still the mechanisms in place to deal with that, right? It's really interesting seeing that crossover of thinking of it as a machine, you know, and the flow charts of if this happens, if A equals B and then C happens, and you know.
And then what about you as a filmmaker?
As a filmmaker, I've gone completely nonverbal with filmmaking as well, and it's clown.
Me too. I do a lot of video that's nonverbal. So yeah,
right.
Yeah.
My short films are all clown, some clown character doing something, and they're just short films as well. But yeah, I'm very much in the world of nonverbal. The thought of having to memorize lines panics me. But I would like to make films with actors who have dialogue. That would be great.
Okay.
I think we're both really interested in the semiotics of objects at its root.
Yeah, and I also get the feeling, and we could also talk about the dynamics of the couple and the metaphor of the couple too, I think. But I feel like that's in the show as well. But
The dynamic of the professor and the assistant on
yes.
stage. Yes, I am the humble assistant who's just desperate to please the professor, and desperate to play with audience. And so, yeah, it's just like our actual relationship, really.
So listen, we got to get going, but any final words for our audience before we go? I mean, maybe we can give them the dates again, but any final words? I mean, obviously we want everybody to come. I highly recommend people come to For Science. This is a fringe play in Winnipeg here, and it's starting on July 20th and going till July 29th at various times. Do check the fringe calendar or the fringe online information to get more information. For Science.
Can I just throw in like we mentioned, it's a clown show and a lot of clown, and some people can immediately go to the red nose, painted face, but that is not the style of clown. We're more in the world of the, Laurel and Hardy, Buster Keaton, Mr. Bean, that kind of thing. So we don't wear makeup, and there's no red noses, and there's quite often we'll say physical comedy because it's less of a triggering word than clown can be sometimes.
Right. And people can participate in the show, which looks like a lot of fun too.
It's so much fun.
Yeah.
It is so much fun. You can participate, you can sit back and watch. It is, you choose your own adventure when you come see For Science.
When we were writing the show, it was like, is there a hidden message here? Is there a deeper meaning? Is there some message about science? Because, science is under scrutiny, I guess. There's a lot of people who don't believe the science anymore. And we just decided, well, Christine just decided, no, let's just make this a big group hug and a fun time and celebrate all the positive things of humanity and just have people play again.
Sounds great. Well, look forward to you both arriving in Winnipeg and the first performance on July 20th for the Winnipeg Fringe Festival. We've got Christine Lesiak and Ian Walker here, two of the performers for For Science. Thank you both, and safe travels to Winnipeg, and all the best for this run during the Fringe Festival in Winnipeg.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Great. Okay, folks, that's it. We'll be back next week with another person for the Fringe Festival. That'll be next week. So we'll talk to everybody Thursday, 5:30 as usual, here on CKOW 95.9 FM. Bye-bye.